Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A lot of Americans have been reliving the Vietnam War era in the last 2 weeks, absorbing the terrific TV documentary on the war and its time from Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. In the hands of skilled filmmakers, the cost of the war, its anguish and division all came flooding back into the present when American soldiers are still deployed in Afghanistan. This hour on Point, the Vietnam War and how it resonates today. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did Ken Burns' documentary series take you back, introduce you to the war? Has America reflected on, learned from, one of the most controversial and consequential wars in our history? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's President Kennedy from early in the series talking to the graduating class of West Point in 1962. In his speech, he described a new type of warfare those graduates would be facing in Vietnam.
This is another type of warfare, new in its intensity, ancient in its origin, war by guerrillas, subversives, insurgents, assassins, war by ambush instead of by combat, by infiltration instead of aggression.
And on, the images and insights go. Leslie Gelb worked at the Pentagon during the Vietnam War. In Ken Burns, Lynn Novick's The Vietnam War, he describes how Americans didn't know much about Vietnam.
None of us knew anything about Vietnam. Vietnam, in those days, was a piece on a chessboard, a strategic chessboard, not a place with a culture and a history that we would have an impossible time changing, even with the mighty force of the United States.
It went on for years and years. It tore the country apart at home. It sacrificed more than 50,000, more than 58,000 American soldiers. And in the end, there was not success. Here's James Willibanks. He served in the Army during the Vietnam War. Late in the series, the documentary series, he described what struck him with the final fall of Saigon, out on those aircraft carriers where the helicopters were coming in so thick and fast trying to get away that they had to shove them off the side of the aircraft carrier.
The image that remains in my mind is the picture of the helicopter being pushed over the side of the carrier. The helicopter was everything in Vietnam. I mean, it was dust off, it was resupply, it was fire support, it was everything. All I could think of was, what a waste, what a waste. As I watched that all unfold, I felt responsible. I was ashamed. We had told these people that we would be there to support them, and we were not.
American veteran James Willibanks in Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's new documentary, The Vietnam War. 10 parts, 18 hours, very powerful. We want to talk about it with our guests and with you. Joining me now in the studio is H.G.S. Greenway, longtime news correspondent, reported deeply on the Vietnam War for Time magazine and The Washington Post. Was one of the last Americans to leave Saigon at the end of the war, covered the American intervention in Iraq and Afghanistan as an editor and columnist for the Boston Globe. His memoir, Foreign Correspondent, H.G.S. Greenway. David, welcome back to On Point.
Welcome to you, Tom.
And with us from Austin, Texas, Aaron B. O'Connell, 22-year career in the U.S. Marine Corps, served in the Afghanistan War. Now a military historian, professor of history at the University of Texas, Austin, former director of defense policy and strategy on the National Security Council, editor of Our Latest Longest War, Losing Hearts and Minds in Afghanistan. Aaron O'Connell, welcome back to On Point. Very happy to have you with us today.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
David, a lot of people, myself included, have been riveted by this documentary. It spans the years in which I was growing up in short pants and just coming into awareness as a very, very young person. But you were there and in the thick of it. What's your assessment of the image of the war that we are given in this work of Ken Burns and Lynn Novick? Does it line up with what you saw?
I think it definitely does line up with what I saw. And what I got out of it was learning what the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong were thinking and doing. I thought that was one of the best things, that you learned what the other side was doing in all these battles.
And what struck you most about that?
How well organized they were, and how they were able to motivate their people. And I think one of the problems we always had in Vietnam, and I think we've had later in Afghanistan, is getting out of the image of the colonial master. And the North Vietnamese were always able to say, we're fighting for the true Vietnam, and making the South Vietnamese seem like puppets. And I think the Taliban is very clever at that too, of knowing their history of fighting foreigners.
Of course, on the ground, Americans coming in, and this was after the great victory in World War II, less clear-cut outcome in Korea. Nevertheless, the image that the Americans were taught was, we are indomitable. Here's Bill Earhart. He served in the Marine Corps in Vietnam. This is episode 4 of Ken Burns, Lynn Novick's The Vietnam War. Said he got into the war because he thought America would win.
I mean, America doesn't lose. We never lose. I had sort of not really known much about the War of 1812, which was pretty much of a draw, or the Civil War, in which half of America lost, and the Korean War, where we won the first half and lost the second half. But I had been taught America never loses.
But America did in Vietnam, and the price was terrible. There's a very interesting, Aaron, a moment later in the show. This is Dong Van Mai Elliott. She lived in Saigon during the Vietnam War. And in the final episode, she said that America made South Vietnam unable to defend itself with what it supported, with the vision of war that it brought.
There were many mistakes made by the Americans, but the biggest mistake was in creating the sense of dependency. Another mistake was in creating an army in their own image, an army that was used to fighting a rich man's war, and South Vietnam was too poor to be able to sustain that kind of war.
That kind of war. But Aaron, that's the military, the South Vietnamese military that the U.S. finally left behind when Richard Nixon, facing all kinds of opposition to the war at home, got U.S. troops out and said, you know, we're handing it off to forces that will carry it from here. That sounds very familiar in the current effort, U.S. efforts in Afghanistan, Aaron.
Oh, it certainly does, yeah. I think Zwan Van Mai's quote that you just aired is exactly a problem that we have in Afghanistan. Now, it's important to say that President Obama tried to avoid this exact problem of dependency. That was the reason for the limited surge of 1 year and then our troops would come home. He got a lot of criticism for that. But the explicit purpose there was to not allow the Afghan government or military to become entirely dependent on the United States. Of course, President Trump has just reversed that decision. He's embraced an open-ended commitment to ensuring a total yet unspecified victory. So it's time will tell if the Afghan government gets more dependent on us or less, but it's the same problem as in Vietnam.
David, you were there. Do you remember this evolution as Americans began to come to terms with the fact that all the military might of the United States and all of its resources could not guarantee, could not bring a victory here, and how that sunk in over bloody years?
Well, going back to my Elliott's remark about we tried to create an army in our own image, mm-hmm. We tried to create a country in our own image. And our ideas that South Vietnamese would just like to become little Americans is, I think, the same problem we've made in Afghanistan, assuming that all Afghans want to be just like us, and a purple thumb showing that you voted is going to solve a problem of 1,000 years of ethnic and tribal tension. And so it began very clearly after the Tet Offensive. in those years after the Tet Offensive.
This was the great shock to the American system when the North Vietnamese just flooded down and gave everybody a drubbing that was not expected. 1968.
We called it a military victory, which in many sense it was, but it was also the moment we lost the war because the American people weren't going to support it anymore. And it wouldn't have been a war we could win without huge effort and bloodshed that was beyond what we were prepared to do.
Was it winnable without destroying Vietnam? There was an awful lot of destruction as it was. We see in this documentary again and again, just laying waste, you know, to mile after mile, and there was no victory in it.
I don't think it was winnable because the North Vietnamese could come back and recover and come back and come back and come back again as long as their spirit held.
Aaron, you served in Afghanistan. You see the young soldiers in this documentary and what they were asked to do. Which at some points was quite cruel, quite inhuman, and you could see the looks on their faces as they were doing it. What's happening here?
Yeah, I think it's important to spot some similarities and differences on the average infantryman on the ground. So certainly one thing that's similar, I had tears well up in my eyes when Tim O'Brien started talking about the fear of the ground, that the danger in Vietnam was not a soldier you could fight and use a conventional notion.
The landmines, the compromised
ground, the earth in front of you. And the same is exactly so in Afghanistan, which has really severe consequences for those who come home. Because if the returning veteran is afraid of a bit of garbage on the ground, then it really makes it more difficult for him to live a normal life and cope. So that was similar. Now, the treatment of civilians was largely different.
Hold that difference if you'd be good enough, Aaron. We're up against a break right here. We'll come right back and look at it with Aaron B. O'Connell, 22-year career U.S. Marine Corps veteran, served in Afghanistan. Now he's at University of Texas, Austin. And HDS David Greenway is with us, veteran, foreign correspondent, war correspondent, served many years in Vietnam. Listeners, you can join us. Have you just spent 18 hours or a chunk of it reliving Vietnam, the Vietnam War through Ken Burns' series? What did you see? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Battle sounds from the Vietnam War, from the Ken Burns, Lynn Novak documentary series, The Vietnam War, which has just wrapped up. We're looking at it and how Americans think back and look around right now. Think back on the Vietnam War. Think about Afghanistan right now. You can join us this hour. Have you watched this documentary? What memories, what feelings, what insights did it bring back? Did that war, the Vietnam War, shape your young life? How do you look at it, look back on it now? And did we ever really deal with that wound? Younger listeners, did you watch the Vietnam documentary and say, oh my God, that was worse than I thought? And what about Afghanistan right now? HDS David Greenway is with us in the studio. He was a correspondent in Vietnam for years, for Time Magazine, for the Washington Post, in the thick of it, one of the last Americans to leave Vietnam. Aaron B. O'Connell, 22-year Marine Corps veteran, is with us, served in Afghanistan. He is now a military historian at the University of Texas, Austin, and editor of Our Latest Longest War, Losing Hearts and Minds in Afghanistan. Here's a little bit from the documentary. Robert Rowe was Army Special Forces in Vietnam, talked in the documentary about the goal of winning hearts and minds of the Vietnamese people.
People used to joke in Vietnam about winning the hearts and minds, and you hear that expression. But that should not be a joke. It's a serious problem. If you pull off a military operation, and it may be successful on the military basis, but you destroy a village, and then you've created a village of resistance.
And it happened again and again for years. Here from the documentary, Tran Ngoc Thuan, a former South Vietnamese Marine, remembering the arrival of American ground troops in Vietnam, 1965.
When the American come in 1965, everything messed up in South Vietnam. Nobody know about the country, the people, and the ground they fought. I think it's a big mistake.
American presidents wrestled with that very same impression. Here's part from the documentary of a recorded phone call between President Lyndon B. Johnson and National Security Advisor McGeorge Bundy, where LBJ reflects on the strain he was experiencing over Vietnam.
I just stayed awake last night thinking about this thing. The more I think of it, I don't know what in the hell. It looks like me we're getting into another Korea. It just worries the hell out of me. I don't see what we can ever hope to get out of there with once we're committed. I don't think it's worth fighting for, and I don't think we can get out. And it's just the biggest damn mess.
It's an awful mess.
And I just thought about ordering those kids in there, and what in the hell am I ordering him out there for?
One thing that is
Vietnam worth to me. What is it worth to this country?
What is Vietnam worth to me? What is it worth to this country? What about the strategic chessboard? We heard Leslie Gelb talk about that, David.
I think that one of our big mistakes in Vietnam was to look at everything through the lens of the Cold War. While the Vietnamese and many people in the Third World, the anti-colonial struggle, getting rid of foreigners.
Give us our independence, our freedom.
Getting their independence was much more important than any communism or non-communism. And I think that's a big mistake we made not to understand that.
Aaron, what about the lens of our engagement in Afghanistan? What is it? Are we still responding to 9/11?
Yeah, that's a good question. You got to remember that soldiers don't just carry their guns and uniforms to war. They carry their stories, too. And when the stories clash with the people they're trying to help, then the result is friction, right? And so just as that same South Vietnamese Marine explained in the film, he had this marvelous quote saying, "In the depth of every South Vietnamese mind is the belief that the foreigner is the invader." So when the Americans came in 1965, the Viet Cong could recruit more people to fight against them. That's exactly what's happened in Afghanistan. We have a narrative that we're there to help and to train and to improve their basic security. They have a narrative of you're a foreigner, and we have a long tradition of resisting foreigners. We want to be independent. And so even the people we are trying to help have resisted much of what we're trying to do, and it leads to really extensive cultural friction.
And here we are now 16 years with ground combat troops in Afghanistan. Lots of people have been watching this documentary, calling in Ron in Hartford, Connecticut. Thank you for calling, Ron. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I just want to say that I went to Vietnam in 1967 when I was 18, and I got a Purple Heart. I was diagnosed with PTSD in 2004. I watched every episode, and I'll say, it was like doing a tour all over again. I'm glad I did it. I'm proud to have been a soldier in the United States Army, and I love the United States of America. Thank you.
Ron, I appreciate your call. I mean, there is meditation in this documentary on who it was that served. Of course, the draft was big, and for a time, lots of people from all classes of society were being pulled in. But here's Vincent Okamoto from the documentary. He's the most highly decorated Japanese-American to survive the Vietnam War. Incredible guy from this show, a judge in L.A., I think I saw now. Served as an officer, spoke in the documentary series about who the heroes truly were among the Americans.
The real heroes are the men that died.
19, 20-year-old high school dropouts. They didn't have escape routes that the elite and the wealthy and the privileged had. And that was unfair. And so they looked upon military services like the weather. You had to go in and you'd do it.
David Greenway, you were there. I mean, we know that many people avoided the draft, but many were caught up in it. Our president now, five deferrals from serving in Vietnam. That's a lot. But there's Vincent Okamoto saying, you know, who ended up going ultimately as the ways out expanded were, you know, guys who weren't in college, didn't have a lot of high education, who weren't privileged, didn't find that way. Could you see that demographic?
Oh, yes, very much so. So much of Vietnam's our soldiers came from poor backgrounds. And I'm sorry to say a lot of my friends were not there, or people younger than I, mm-hmm. from where I went to college and went to school. Very, very few served in Vietnam. And I think that was so much different than in World War II. Or even Korea.
Where it was sort of everybody in it together.
Everybody in it together.
Aaron O'Connell, what about in Afghanistan now and over all these years? Is there a sense there that this being fought by, you know, among elites, if I can say that, by other people's children?
Yeah, there we have a difference between Vietnam and the present day. There's been very little work on this because the military doesn't collect class data, economic data on who joins the military.
Why but, not?
Well, it's pretty difficult to ask somebody, tell us how much money your parents made when you join, right? We have education levels, we have racial and gender numbers, but it's hard to do that. What studies there have been show that the U.S. Armed Forces today is actually a pretty fair representation of American society, and that's a key difference here. We have an all-volunteer force. There is not a draft, and that explains a great deal of the difference in the societal context. The massive opposition to Vietnam begins immediately with the ground war in 65, 2 months in.
The ground war and the draft that followed.
That's right. That's right. There's teach-ins all over campuses. There's a 25,000 people protesting in Washington, D.C. by the spring of 65. You don't have that in Afghanistan, and that's partially because you're not forcing people into a war. You're not choosing those people unfairly. And the military, at least in terms of racial and basic regional demographic data, does represent the country.
Here's Phil Gioia from the series, a captain in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War, talking about the polarization that tension brought to this country.
I think the Vietnam War drove a stake right into the heart of America. It polarized the country as it had probably never been polarized since before the Civil War. And unfortunately, we've never moved really far away from that. And we never recovered.
And Sam Wilson, who served in the Army during the Vietnam War, here he was.
This turned out to be the most bitter, the most divisive, or second most bitter and second most divisive war in our entire history. And we still hurt because of it. What are your feelings of guilt about Vietnam?
Second most divisive war in our history, David Greenway, and of course he's comparing it, can only compare to the Civil War, it would divisive by definition. When you look at the way this country was torn right down to the roots by the Vietnam War, anybody who lived through it cannot forget that. And then here we are in Afghanistan 16 years, and it's kind of over there. What produced the difference?
Well, I don't think if we still had a draft, I don't think we'd still be in Afghanistan. But secondly, the losses we're taking in Afghanistan are so much less than what we did in Vietnam.
2,400 and counting now in Afghanistan, 58,000 plus in Vietnam.
Exactly.
It's a staggering number.
Yes. There's another connection, though, I think. The Ken Burns, Lynn Novick, makes a very good point that how corruption sapped the morale of the South Vietnamese. And I think that was true on our side in Iraq, and I think it's true of our side in Afghanistan, that the corruption is eating away at everything we're trying to do.
The corruption, Aaron, do you see that? Do you see that factor in Afghanistan now?
Absolutely, I do. And I think that's important to focus on, that the United States fights its wars in accordance with the basic principles and concepts and cultural currents in its society. We are a Western capitalistic society. As a result, we've tried to throw things and money at the problem. We tried to do this in Vietnam. We tried to do it in Iraq. We're trying to do it in Afghanistan. And that has a number of negative effects. Obviously, it encourages graft and waste and corruption. On top of that, it also makes the wealth disparity incredibly obvious, even to our partners.
You mean in Afghanistan in this case?
Absolutely, yes. An ordinary Afghan sees the trucks of ice cream and food and resources everywhere, and that engenders some degree of animosity. I will tell you, I've never eaten more lobster in my life than in Afghanistan, which is nonsensical on its face, but it's because we use the same approach of just a strategy of abundance for morale, and then a strategy of trying to arm the Afghans with the modern technology and as much ammunition and trucks and tanks as they need. And of course, that leads to a misuse in combat as well. You can crash a truck and get another. That's a real problem, and it actually stems from the way that this nation has almost always fought wars in the 20th century and beyond.
And people are watching when that happens. David, in the documentary, we hear and see North Korean veterans talking about how they were eating what they could only grub out of the ground. They got just a little bit of rice, and when they would find MREs, meals ready to eat, that the Americans had left behind, they said each one was like a picnic for a family.
Yes, the hardship that they put up with that was one of the things that the series really pointed out, how difficult it was for the North Vietnamese.
And they died and died and died.
In enormous numbers.
But would not quit. We're looking at the Vietnam War, Afghanistan today. Many people have been watching the documentary series by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. Melanie in Toronto, Canada. Melanie, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Okay.
I am 62. In 68, I was 13. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my family was very active in protesting the war. We'd go to all the peace marches, and so I was, you know, teenager growing into my 20s, and I worked for Eugene McCarthy. So I was very always anti-war. Seeing this documentary, at first I didn't want to see it because I had read some reviews, and I started watching it. I was captivated, but then I became so angry and sad, and I found it very hard to watch, and I would turn it on every night, and I would watch it, and then I'd have to turn it off because it just made me so angry. I don't think I was always anti-war, and I always knew it was the wrong war, but to see the totality of what happened and the destruction we wrought on another country and on ourselves, it's so painful, and I think we have to find another option, and we should make war obsolete. We have to put our best minds to figure out how we solve problems without using the hammer of war. It's a blunt instrument, and it is not solving things. And I look at Korea right now, I look at Afghanistan, and I think we're still using the same mindset of going in with our abundance, as your last speaker talked about, and trying to solve things in this gross way when the problems are other. They are economic, they are cultural, we have to do some real work on ourselves and look at how we solve problems.
Melanie, I appreciate your call. Erin O'Connell, what about that learning? Many of those who have been in leadership positions for the U.S. military in Afghanistan have been students of Vietnam. Has that turned around our country's engagement in some fundamental way?
Absolutely right. Yes, and no, it hasn't. Which is of course interesting, right? The very people who wrote the counterinsurgency manual that we tried to apply in Afghanistan were students of Vietnam. Petraeus wrote a PhD dissertation on Vietnam. McMaster wrote a PhD dissertation on Vietnam. Then General Mattis, now Secretary Mattis, knows more about the history of the Vietnam War than 99% of the world. I'd say the man is as deeply read in the topic as is possible. So it isn't that they didn't know what went wrong. The problem is that trying to change American military bureaucracy or government bureaucracy or the habits of mind of our culture is very different. So even when you can see the iceberg in front of you, it's very hard to turn the ship of state away from it. And that was true in the well-staffed and reasonably well-functioning presidencies of George Bush and Barack Obama. And it's even more true in the chaotic, understaffed, and politically experienced Trump administration. So seeing the problem isn't enough. Knowing what went wrong before isn't enough. It's very difficult to actually move the large machine of state towards a new outcome. We've struggled to do so in Afghanistan.
David Greenway, the anger that Melanie feels looking back was very present at home during this war. Some of it went right to Vietnam itself. I mean, we see students being shot down in Kent State, where we took this show just last fall. And Americans ultimately thinking, what's happening? The war has come home to us. The division was so deep.
Well, we weren't used to failure. No war had lasted so long. And we didn't understand that we couldn't – there weren't enough visible results. The progress that we were told we're making was mm-hmm. all an illusion. Mm-hmm. And when you tell – this is why Tet Offensive was such a big shock mm-hmm. because we'd been told, no, we're winning. They're never going to attack Saigon, all these kind of things. And I think that self-deception has been a problem. Sebastian Junger, in his war about Afghanistan, his book about mm-hmm. Cold War, said it wasn't that they were lying so much as they're asking you to join a conspiracy of wishful thinking.
And a very, very costly conspiracy in the case of Vietnam, maybe Afghanistan as well. David Greenway, please stand by. Aaron O'Connell. We're looking at the Vietnam War and Afghanistan as Ken Burns' Vietnam War documentary wraps up. Listeners, you can join us. Were you there? Did you watch? Did it take you back? Did you learn for the first time? And what light does it shed on the American war in Afghanistan right now? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Vietnam War and Afghanistan as Ken Burns Linovic's Vietnam War documentary wraps up and Americans think back and look around right now as we remain at war, 16 years and counting, in Afghanistan. Aaron O'Connell is with us, 22-year Marine Corps veteran, served in Afghanistan, now military historian at the University of Texas at Austin, editor of our latest Longest War, Losing Hearts and Minds in Afghanistan. HGS David Greenway is with us. He was for years a war correspondent in Vietnam for Time Magazine, for the Washington Post, one of the last Americans to leave Saigon. You can join us this hour. Were you there? Have you been looking back through this documentary? How are you thinking today in 2017, all these years later, about the Vietnam War, the toll of it, 58,000 plus in Vietnam, and what we might learn for Afghanistan about ourselves more broadly right now? The protests back home became fierce in the Vietnam War. 1968, anti-war demonstrators were in the streets of Chicago, Democratic National Convention there, epic battle with police. The police just kind of went wild. It was terrible. Billy clubs swinging every which way, complete mayhem. And veterans, ultimately, themselves started protesting the war back in the U.S. Really moving footage from the documentary. Ron Farisi, Army helicopter crew chief, much decorated veteran of the Vietnam War, one of a number of veterans throwing their medals over a fence in front of the U.S. Capitol during a demonstration in April of 1971. Listen to how highly decorated. All the medals going over that fence.
Silver Star, the third highest medal in the country. It doesn't mean anything. Fox Neal died for these medals. Lieutenant Pomeroy died so I got a medal. Sergeant Johns died so I got a medal. I got a Silver Star, Purple Heart, Army Commendation Medal, 8 Air Medals, National Defense, and the rest of this garbage. It doesn't mean a thing.
Protesting the Vietnam War, veterans throwing their medals over the fence. John Kerry was among them in 1971. George in Buffalo, New York, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, George.
Thank you, Tom. I am a veteran of Vietnam myself, very fortunate not to have taken any life there. And my deepest sympathy goes out to all who lost combatants there, both ours and theirs, so
yes.
to speak.
Yes.
But the ours and theirs is an utter fiction for me. There was never an enemy there for me. This was a political enemy. I wouldn't have been able to find Vietnam on a map if you'd asked me to before they sent me there. And I learned everything I needed to know about what this fundamentally reduced to when I heard the term gook applied to all Vietnamese as a generic term, irregardless of their political alignment or anything else about them. The term was gook.
The racist slur.
It was a race war. That's what it was. It was a race war. And I'm sorry to say that I believe we're involved in the same phenomenon, an unexamined one, especially in terms of this present administration, that this nation deeply needs to consider. You cannot save those whom you do not love. And we did not love the Vietnamese, nor do we love the Afghans, nor do we love most of those whom we hope to convert to our system. And that's why we're failing all over the world.
George, it was a race war and getting involved. I mean, surely Americans at that time would never have portrayed it that way. They saw a menace, a communist menace around the world, domino theory and all the rest. People weren't putting it in racial terms going in, certainly.
Well, don't you think that's been revealed as a transparent fiction? I mean, by some of our own ideologues themselves have recanted.
I mean, as the documentary unfolds, certainly the level of barbarity is so mind-boggling. One must, of course, yes, think that race comes into it. I mean, we know the images of the destruction that went on there. David Greenway, you were there, and you hear George's, he was there as serving, and you hear his conclusion about it, and he projects it forward to right now, Afghanistan.
I think the trouble is that while in World War II we had great affiliation with the French and the British, and we wanted to support them against tyranny, but again, Les Galb's strategic chessboard. Nobody really cared about Vietnam. It was the strategic chessboard. And nobody really cares about Afghanistan. It's just the strategic chessboard and our desire to combat terrorism. But there were no Afghans on the planes that bombed the Twin Towers and the Pentagon.
Nevertheless, our soldiers are there. They've been asked for years to fight there. There's another documentary out there lately. CNN's Legion of Brothers aired on Sunday. It's about Afghanistan. And listening to it, there's some eerie parallels with Vietnam. Here's Master Sergeant Paul Evans talking about the Afghan war experience, and how it was difficult to determine in Afghanistan who was on your side and who was your enemy.
You see a man with an AK who is dressed just like your enemy, and you've got to walk over to him and basically ask him, hey, how you doing? And you have no idea whether he's going to say, put out his hand and shake it, or he's going to shoot you.
Aaron O'Connell, what about George's observation here? We're looking for roots of why these things go on and why the destruction can be so great. He said there was never an enemy in Vietnam. What about, we did have 9/11. We did have Al-Qaeda bases in the Afghan region. What about the reason for being there? And what about race as a background factor or more?
Right, yeah. So the context for how the wars began is radically different in Vietnam and in Afghanistan. The 9/11 attacks were planned from Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda started in Afghanistan. It's true there were no Afghans on the airliners, but I think that's irrelevant. So the strategic rationale for actually invading Afghanistan was quite sound. There was a definite attack that killed 3,000 Americans. That's very different from Gulf of Tonkin, where on the day it was happening, they knew they had at best a maybe about the famous second torpedo boat attack. So the reason for going in is different in the two wars. In Vietnam, it is almost entirely about preserving international credibility, the president's personal credibility, and indeed the credibility of the Democratic Party. That's not what leads us into Afghanistan. It plays a factor later on. There's no doubt about it, so much so that President Obama felt the need to explain why Afghanistan was different from Vietnam in his 2009 surge speech. He also was concerned about credibility. President Trump, I'm sure, is concerned about credibility. As to the larger point about race, here I disagree. I don't think it's fair to say Afghanistan is a race war in any way. Certainly, race played a severe and destabilizing role in Vietnam, both between white and African-American troops, in South Vietnam, and between American combatants and Vietnamese. Race is a factor. We carry our stories to war with us. The United States was then and remains a society fundamentally divided by race. You only have to look at the NFL to think about that right now. But no, to say that this is a race war, I think badly misstates the facts and also does a disservice to our men and women in uniform. In fact, the U.S. military is remarkably multicultural and has an easier time relating to different races just by dint of the fact that they're all thrown together in the barracks.
Looking at Afghanistan today, Michelle in St. Petersburg, Florida. Michelle, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I want to send warmth, love, and gratitude to your previous caller. I was touched by what he said. George, I want to... at dinner table conversations with my parents, my dad had a high draft number. They lived through it, through Vietnam. I did not. They mentioned the Vietnam War and the aftermath as the catalyst for losing faith in the government and for becoming cynical about politics and the motives behind the people who are in power. To me, that idea was completely foreign. I had grown up completely mistrusting authority and power. I had grown up with that idea that people who are in charge don't have your best interests at heart. And I was so confused at 9/11 when we didn't show that kind of cynicism and critical thinking regarding, we didn't go into Afghanistan right away. The war in Iraq was the first one, the one that was catalyzed by that.
Well, of course, we did go to Afghanistan pretty much right away, but Iraq followed on its heels, and we take that point. It is interesting, though, David, the issue of trust and faith and cynicism about government. I mean, the distrust grew so immensely during the Vietnam War years, and you cannot watch this documentary without seeing and feeling why. We have a little tape here. This is March 1971. This is a conversation about... an offensive the South Vietnamese military was supposed to carry out to disrupt the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. And this is President Nixon talking on the famous tapes, expressing his concerns to then National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger. I mean, he doesn't believe in the effort. And in the end, to him, it's all about politics and his reelection. Here we are.
Now that I've seen the operation, the South Vietnamese army is not as good as we all thought.
Henry, I become fatalistic about that. I don't think they're up to a real man. I'd rather have them get out, and then we're going to get the hell out and hold and pray that nothing happened before 1972 in space. And if my reelection is important, let's remember I've got to get this off our feet.
We're getting the hell out. I'm completely fatalistic about this thing, but that was not the face Richard Nixon was showing to Americans and the world. I mean, David Greenway, we see in Vietnam in the later years, American soldiers in tremendous distress, still going out and doing the job, but their own faith lost. And then you come to the motivation of the South Vietnamese when Americans, pull out and, hey, good luck, you're on your own.
But there was the fifth largest army in the world, American trained, American armed. And I think that... we saw the same thing in another army, American trained, collapse in 2014 in Iraq when they ran away from ISIS. And I think the lesson is that you can arm other people's armies, you can train them, but you cannot instill motivation. That has to be done by the people themselves. And it's beyond the power of the United States or any other foreign army to motivate an army to fight on its own.
Of course, by those later years, the motivation of the U.S. troops themselves looked pretty frayed. Here is John Musgrave, served in the Marines in Vietnam from the Vietnam War, describing how he saw the conflict and his trust in his own government.
I was going to go if my government said we needed to be there. We were probably the last kids of any generation that actually believed our government would never lie to us.
Jill in Portsmouth, Virginia. Jill, thank you very much for calling. You are on the air.
What struck me, I was a nurse.
In Vietnam?
And what struck me is that right from Kennedy on, they knew they couldn't win. They knew they weren't going to do anything. It was saving face. And I watched people die for no reason at all.
We hear it, Jill, and we saw it in this documentary. And ultimately, you know, there was that awareness quite widely spread. This is a bit from the last episode of the documentary, The Vietnam War. As Saigon fell, the CIA sent its last cable home.
This will be the final message from Saigon Station, the CIA chief Thomas Polgar wired to Washington. It has been a long fight, and we have lost. Those who fail to learn from history are forced to repeat it. Let us hope that we will not have another Vietnam experience and that we have learned our lesson. Saigon, signing off.
The last CIA cable from Saigon. Aaron O'Connell, are we repeating it in Afghanistan?
Yeah, thanks for that, Tom. History doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. I think that there are a number of things that are really similar between the two wars that deserve self-reflection. I really think that sometimes America is like a person looking back on a string of failed marriages and saying, I don't get it. You know, these people were all so different. What went wrong? Well, after the fourth divorce, it's not them, it's you, right? I mean, you have to look inward. That is true in larger affairs like warfare. There are deep running currents here, and if we don't pay attention to them, they're going to push us down the same path. That's why we called the book Our Latest Longest War, because there are so many similarities between Vietnam and Afghanistan that aren't because the countries are similar or the contexts are similar or even the politics are similar, but because the U.S. military and the U.S. government and the way that we fight wars is similar, and it's tied to our culture, and without self-reflection, we're likely to repeat that mistake again in the future.
David, there's a sorrow that runs through this documentary series as it reaches its end. Is there understanding? Is there deeper compassion?
I think there's very deep compassion. I worry about the understanding because I agree with Aaron O'Connell that we haven't got it. We're still making so many of the same mistakes a generation later.
Is it in ourselves?
Well, it's in ourselves.
We look inward as we look back on Vietnam. We look out at Afghanistan. There are real challenges in the world, real challenges in our own way of seeing the world, perhaps, as well, and responding to it. A lot of people plugged in to this series over the last 2 weeks. I want to thank the two of you very much for being with us. HDS Greenway, David Greenway, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And Aaron O'Connell, 22-year Marine Corps veteran now at the University of Texas, Austin. Thank you very much, Aaron, for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.